You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
A good place to begin the podcast is at the beginning. In this case, the beginning of time and the universe. That's assuming that there is a beginning, of course. While the Big Bang model tells us that space and time were born together almost 14 billion years ago, in recent years, cosmologists have come up with a few models in which time and the universe could have existed forever into the past.
Yes, those models include the multiverse, in which multiple bubble universes are continually being born.
Then there's the cyclic universe. That's one in which the cosmos cycles through a series of bangs and crunches, expanding, then contracting, again and again, forever.
And there's even an emergent universe picture, in which the universe existed forever into the past as a small static ball, or cosmic egg, which then suddenly hatched, expanding into the cosmos we see around us today.
FQXI member Alex Vilenkin and his colleague Audrey Matani, both at Tufts University, decided it was time to calculate if any of those exotic models really can sustain a universe that always existed, or if even these need to have had a beginning. Zia chatted to Alex Vilenkin, who began by explaining the idea of a beginning in the Big Bang model, and why that can't be taken for granted.
First cosmological models, they had this initial singularity, where the size of the universe is zero, the density of matter is infinite, and so it looked like the beginning of the universe.
And that's pretty much what we call the Big Bang now, when we talk about that.
That's right. But physicists were always uneasy about the beginning because it suggested some supernatural intervention, because physics cannot really describe this. It was first systematically addressed by Stephen Hawking and Roger Penrose, who proved so-called singularity theorems, that under certain conditions, this initial singularity in the equations is inevitable, which indicates the beginning of the universe.
In their calculations showing that a Big Bang singularity was inevitable, Stephen Hawking and Roger Penrose had made an assumption about the way that gravity behaves. In particular, they assumed that gravity must be attractive. That may seem like a safe bet, but according to Einstein's theory of gravity, general relativity, both matter and pressure contribute to gravity, and if the pressure is large and negative, gravity can become repulsive. In the early 1980s, cosmologists developed a more complicated picture of the early universe, in which the infant cosmos went through a rapid burst of inflation, expanding at a ferocious rate. During inflation, Hawking and Penrose's condition, that gravity must always be attractive, does not apply.
Inflation actually is driven by repulsive gravity. It is a super-fast accelerated expansion of the universe. And during inflation, the universe is in the state with large negative pressure where gravity becomes repulsive. And that's why the universe expands so fast. And this scenario explained a number of puzzles that plague cosmology. And also, it has significant observational support now. So we have good reasons to believe that inflation actually happened. So for inflation, Hawking and Penrose theorems no longer apply. And also, you know, there was this intriguing thing about inflation that soon after inflation was suggested, it was realized that inflation is generically eternal.
The idea of eternal inflation is that different regions of space-time can suddenly start to inflate, each one blowing up into its own separate bubble universe, each with its own Big Bang. This creates a multitude of parallel neighboring universes, the multiverse. The question is, did the multiverse, fueled by eternal inflation, itself have a beginning?
So in this eternal inflation, this inflationary expansion continues forever. It never ends to the future. And so it naturally suggests the question of whether or not it's possible to continue this picture to the infinite past. So you would have then a universe without a beginning and without an end, which continuously produces these regions like ours. And many people thought it was a very attractive picture because beginning, of course, has very perplexing problems associated with it.
So it's almost like an old-fashioned view of going back to thinking that the universe just always existed.
That's right, yeah. And physicists always, most of them at least, always preferred this view, because then you don't really have to address these issues of what caused the universe to begin and so forth. So the latest development in this eternal inflation issue, as it is related to beginning, was the theorem that I proved with Arvin Boorda and Alan Guth. And that theorem says the following, that if the universe is on average expanding, then it cannot be eternal to the past. If we are talking about inflationary universe, during inflation, the universe does expand. It expands very fast. So it appears that this condition is satisfied in this particular context. So it says that inflation cannot be continued forever to the past. Right? It must have had some sort of a beginning. There were a number of attempts to get around this theorem, and there were two scenarios that were suggested trying to find a model without a beginning. One scenario is the cyclic universe.
Right, so can you explain a bit more about what the cyclic universe is?
Well, the idea of a cyclic universe is actually very old, that the universe, maybe it goes in cycles. It expands, then it recollapses, and then it goes through another round of expansion and contraction. And this goes on in cycles. And people discussed this in the last century. There is one problem with this, which is a very serious problem, which has to do with the second law of thermodynamics, which says that entropy grows, that is, disorder in the universe increases. And so in each cycle, the entropy will increase, and this will inevitably lead to a state of thermal equilibrium, where temperature is everywhere the same, and there is a featureless kind of mixture of everything, maximally disordered. And this is not what we observe in the universe. So it couldn't go through a succession of cycles which are more or less identical. But one way to get around this is to say that, okay, maybe it goes through cycles, but in each cycle, the volume of the universe actually grows. So each cycle consists of expansion and contraction, but there is more expansion than contraction. And if the volume grows, the total entropy may increase, but the entropy per unit volume will not. So in that case, it is observationally okay, and you can have this sort of scenario. Precisely this kind of scenario was considered by Paul Steinhardt and Neil Turok recently in their cyclic universe model. However, for this cyclic scenario, this theorem that I mentioned, that Boorda, Guth, and me, it applies to this case because on average, you have expansion, right? You have more expansion than contraction, therefore the universe on average expands, and so the theorem then says that it cannot be continued to the past. So these cycles must have had a beginning.
Right, I see. So that's the second scenario that now you've proven would have to have had a beginning too.
That's right. Since then, there was yet another scenario proposed, which was developed by George Ellis and his collaborators, and this is called the emergent universe. Emergent universe, the idea is that the universe started like a static, closed universe.
I liked the way that you referred to this in your paper. You sort of described it as a cosmic egg.
Right. You know, ancient Hindus came up pretty much with all possible cosmological scenarios. They had eternal universe, they had cyclic universe, and they had also this cosmic egg idea that, you know, sits there forever and then bursts at the beginning of things. And it existed in this static form forever. So it is like a spherical closed universe, like the geometry of the universe is a three-dimensional sphere, and it is stabilized by pressure and gravity. And then this model assumes some trigger that triggers the universe to start expanding. So it existed forever in the static form, and then it started expanding and expands since then. In this case, the theorem does not apply because if the universe was in a static state for an infinite time, the average expansion rate is zero. And it appears that this model gives a possibility for the universe to have no beginning. So So this is the main focus of the paper that I wrote recently with my student Audrey Mitani. And what we found was that even though this emergent universe model is viable at the classical level, but quantum mechanically it is not. And the reason is that this static seed that is assumed to have existed forever is unstable with respect to quantum collapse.
Can you explain a bit more about what quantum collapse is? What is that?
When the universe is the static universe that is stable, what does it mean? It means that it cannot. It has a radius, and this radius doesn't grow and doesn't increase because it would cost energy to go either way, to smaller or larger radii. It sits at the energy minimum, and that's why it is stable. But in quantum mechanics, quantum systems can go through energy barriers. And this is what is called quantum tunneling. So you can have, like, say, a little ball in a box, and the walls of the box would not let the ball get out of it because there is energy cost of going through the wall. But quantum mechanically, it can tunnel through. There is some probability, although for macroscopic objects, it is very small for this ball to tunnel through the wall. But for microscopic systems, this happens all the time. Like, for example, radioactive decay is an example of such a thing, that atomic nucleus decays through quantum tunneling. Even though classically it could never do that, but quantum mechanically it happens. So this universe tunnels to smaller radius, basically to zero radius, through this quantum mechanical process of tunneling. And this probability, again, it may be very small, but if you have an infinite time, it happens inevitably. So such a universe could not have existed forever.
Okay, so I guess those were basically the three main scenarios where people have suggested that the universe could have existed infinitely back in time. And you've sort of ruled out all three of those now.
That's right. At the present state of the art, the answer to the question of whether or not the universe had a beginning is probably yes. And that tells us that we have to face this question in terms of physics and try to figure out how could the universe begin.
And are we any closer to answering that question?
There is one model which I find satisfactory, and I don't think there are any others actually at the moment, that the universe could have spontaneously appeared also by process similar to quantum tunneling. This actually has a mathematical description. If you apply quantum mechanics to the entire universe, you find that there is a solution to the equations that describes a spontaneous, let's say, nucleation of a small closed universe, which then starts immediately to expand inflationary. And the universe here in this picture is created basically from nothing, because it's created from the state with no space, no time, and no matter. And suddenly you have a small universe which starts expanding, and all the subsequent evolution is as in eternal inflation scenario.
Having decided that the universe must have had a beginning, whichever way you look at it, Vilenkin has also turned his attention to whether or not astronomers and cosmologists observing the sky could ever learn something about that beginning. His surprising answer is yes, at least in the multiverse scenario with its bubble universes. Cosmologists have already proposed that, if these neighbouring bubble universes exist, they may bump into each other, leaving detectable scars on the sky, across the cosmic microwave background, the relic radiation of the Big Bang. It seems the pattern of these collision wounds could also reveal something about the location of where the beginning of the multiverse took place, thanks to a phenomenon called the persistence of memory.
Basically, if these regions like ours that form in the course of eternal inflation, they have the form of bubbles, and these bubbles expand, and occasionally bubbles collide with one another. So the bubbles that we inhabit can collide with some other bubbles. And it's possible for us to detect observational signatures of these collisions in the microwave background. The inflating universe is actually very symmetric. And the symmetry suggests that if we see at the, suppose we detected a large number of these bubble collisions on the sky, one would expect that these spots that correspond to bubble collisions would be distributed uniformly over the sky. But, well, the point is that this, if the universe had a beginning, this introduces kind of a preferred direction. And so the bubble collisions would be distributed on the sky, not uniformly, but they would gravitate towards certain direction in the sky. And this effect does not go away, even for bubbles that formed very, very late after the beginning. So this is a remnant that, if we indeed are lucky to discover many bubble collisions in the sky, we might see the evidence that indeed there was a beginning, and it would tell us in some sense in what direction that beginning was.
That was Alex Vilenkin talking to Zia. So I guess the take-home message of Vilenkin's work is that actually, yes, the universe must have had a beginning, even in models where, at first sight, it looks like it didn't have to. And at least for the multiverse model, there may even be a way for us to find out in which direction that beginning took place by looking for signs in the cosmic microwave background, the relic radiation of the Big Bang, thanks to this persistence of memory effect.
That's right, and that's quite unexpected because cosmologists had assumed that such information would be hidden from us. If you want to know more about this, then visit the website www.fqxi.org/community/podcast for links to his papers and an article by Kate Becker on Vilenkin's work.